Three Fingers Gomez led Curly Bob Gatling and Rawhide Jack Cummings to the cantina, where he'd first talked to the vaquero from Mexico who wanted to buy their beeves. The cantina stayed open all night, not closing early like the more upper-class establishments in the wealthier part of town. As they entered the cantina, the men had to strain to see through the thick clouds of cigar and cigarette smoke that hung in the air like a morning fog. The smell of stale beer and whiskey and vomit was strong enough to make their eyes water.
You see your man?
Gomez looked around the room, finally seeing the buyer in a far corner, sitting at a table with two Mexican whores and two other cowboys. He pointed, then led the way across the room toward the man.
Señor Torillo, buenas noches.
The vaquero looked up through bleary, bloodshot eyes.
Ah, my friend Gomez, how are you this fine evening?
Three Fingers pulled up a chair from a nearby table and sat next to Trujillo.
I'm fine. I have reconsidered your offer and I wondered if you want to buy the cattle.
See, but I can only pay what we discussed before.
Well, that's fine, as long as we can make that deal tonight.
Why the rush, senor? Sit, drink, and enjoy the company of the fine senoritas here at the cantina. We can talk business later.
No, Señor Torillo, it must be tonight. My compadres and I must be out on the trail early in the morning.
You have trouble, no?
We have much trouble, Señor. And if we don't sell those cattle tonight, you won't be able to buy half a number from anyone else with what you have to spend.
All right. Make out a bill of sale, and I will give you the monies.
Gomez looked over his shoulder at Curly Bill, who nodded. Gomez pulled out a piece of paper and wrote he was selling the cattle to Trujillo and listed the price. When he pushed the paper across the table to the Mexican, Trujillo grinned, grabbed a leather wallet from inside his coat, and handed it to Gomez. He stuck out his hand, and they shook on the deal. Gomez got up from the table and walked to the bar, followed by Curly Bob and Rawhide Jack. He counted the money in the wallet, ordered tequila all around, and when the drinks arrived, he leaned back against the bar and surveyed the other inhabitants of the place.
Now, we've got to find some men willing to take the money to get rid of Smoke Jensen.
Well, that shouldn't be too hard from the looks of the men here.
Rawhide Jack pointed to a table in a far corner of the room, occupied by six men who were all wearing pistols and holsters tied down low on their thighs. Two of the men had bandoliers of rifle shells crisscrossed on their chests.
Those gents look the type.
Why don't you go have a word with them? I think it'd go better if you went alone. You'll probably have to speak Mex to them anyway.
Gomez nodded and started toward the men, but Curly Bob grabbed his arm.
Don't offer them more than you have to. We need some of that money to travel on.
Gomez stared at Curly Bob for a moment, then reached over to the bar and grabbed the bottle of tequila, taking it with him to the table. Curly Bob watched as Gomez sat at the men's table and began pouring them all drinks from the bottle of tequila.
Man knows how to bargain.
You know, Rawhide, I've been wondering if we might not ought to think about moseying on down the road alone. Could be that sticking with Gomez is going to get us hanged right along with him. That Jensen fella comes after us.
Well, you might be right, Curly. We'll just have to play it by ear. One thing, though, from what I heard about Jensen, if he do come after us, it would be good to have an extra gun along. I'd hate to face him without a whole lot of firepower.
There is that to consider.
After a few minutes, Gomez and two of the men at the table got up and walked out the door. Curly Bob and Rawhide Jack followed. Gomez talked to the men, then pulled out the leather wallet Trujillo had given him and counted out a number of bills. He handed them to the men, who grinned, stuffed the bills in their coats, and went back into the cantina.
Well,
it is done. I described Jensen to them. Said they couldn't miss him, being as how he's the biggest man in town.
They gonna do it?
Yeah. They said for us to stay out of sight until tomorrow evening, and they'd hunt him down and put a window in his skull. I told him he'd probably be over at the Silver Dollar talking to Dolly, trying to find out where we were staying.
Curly Bob nodded. Gomez looked at him, his eyes flat.
I told him as long as they were doing it, I'd pay an extra $50 if Dolly happened to get caught in the crossfire.
Why'd you do that?
Because she's figured out I gone down there, kid. I don't want her talking to no lawmen after we're gone.
We gonna wait around to pay them after it's over?
Hell no, I'm hightailing out of town tonight. I ain't waiting around to see how that turns out.
Where are you figuring on heading to?
Think I'll head down south toward Galveston. Might just catch me one of those steamboats and make a little cruise around to the east coast.
That's not a bad idea. Even if Jensen does survive the fracas with the Mexes, he'll never be able to track us on a boat.
Rawhide Jack thought for a moment and then shook his head.
I'm afraid I'm gonna have to pass, boys. One time I was on a boat, I got so sick I like puked my guts out.
Well, what are you gonna do?
I'm gonna head on over to Jacksboro. I heard that's where lots of fellas go when they on the run from the law, or somebody else who might be hunting them. I figure the town's big enough to get lost in for a while, especially if it's full of other men on the hideout too. After all, Jensen ain't gonna be looking for me. I didn't kill nobody.
Gomez opened his mouth to say something, his face red with anger, but Curly Bob grabbed his arm.
Come on, Three Fingers. Rawhide's right. Makes better sense if we split up anyhow. If Jensen does come looking and asking around, he'll be looking for three men riding together, not two.
All right. But you better keep your mouth shut about what you know, Rawhide, or it won't only be Jensen come looking for you.
Curly Bob glanced at the horizon where specks of color could be seen.
Come on, boys. It's getting on toward dawn, and I want to be in the saddle before sunup.
The three men walked rapidly back to the hotel, split the rest of the money, and packed their bags. Then they headed to the livery stable where they'd left their horses. They paid off the boy at the stable and rode out to the edge of town. They sat there for a moment, looking at the two roads leading away. One south, one north.
Adios.
Good luck, boys.
Luck don't hardly have nothing to do with it, Rawhide. You ride with your guns loose, you hear?
Rawhide waved and started his horse up the north trail, while Gomez and Curly Bob turned south toward Galveston. Sally and Monty and Lewis were less than 10 miles out of Fort Smith when they saw a man riding a wagon coming toward them in the distance. Sally spurred her horse into a full gallop and raced toward the man. As she pulled the horse to a stop, she noticed the man was holding a Winchester Yellow Boy cradled in his arms, the hammer cocked.
Are you Marshal Tillman?
He glanced over her shoulder at Monty and Lewis, who were just arriving, and moved the rifle a bit so it covered all three.
Yep.
Sally inclined her head at the rifle.
Are you expecting trouble, Marshal?
Expecting it or not, usually seems to find me. Who are you and what can I do for you?
My name is Sally Jensen, and I was told you were bringing my husband to Fort Smith to stand trial for murder.
Tillman nodded and seemed to relax just a bit.
I was.
What do you mean, was? Isn't Smoke with you?
No, ma'am.
Well, where is he?
On his way back to Fort Worth, I expect.
Marshal, would you please tell me what's going on?
Mrs. Jensen, why don't you get down off that horse and climb up here on the hurricane deck with me? That way I can tell you while I keep this wagon heading toward Fort Smith. I'm already a couple days late, and I'd kind of like to keep moving.
Sally jumped down off her horse, handing the reins to Monty Carson, and climbed up on the wagon with Tillman. He snapped the reins and got the wagon moving, setting his rifle in the boot next to his feet while he drove.
Now, Marshal, what about my husband?
I'm fixing to tell you the damnest story you ever heard, ma'am.
Marshal, if you knew Smoke like I do, you'd know nothing you can say about him will surprise me.
Half an hour later, when Tillman had finished telling Sally about the confrontation with Zachary Stillwell and his gang, and Smoke's subsequent rescue of the Marshal, Sally just nodded.
That's just like Smoke. He never could stand to see an underdog get beaten without joining in to help.
The Marshal glanced at her as if he didn't much like being called an underdog, but then he shrugged it off as if he knew what she meant by it.
So, you do believe my husband's innocent of the charges against him, don't you, Marshal?
Yes, ma'am, I do. I just can't see a man who did what your husband did for me being a back shooter. Of course, you understand that it don't much matter what I think about Smoke. Under the law, he's still a wanted man, and I gotta bring him in as soon as I get these galoots to jail in Fort Smith.
I understand you have to do your duty, Marshal Tillman. But it is good to know you don't truly believe Smoke is capable of shooting a man in the back.
No, ma'am. I think that gambler fella Gibbons was lying when he said he saw Smoke do it. I just don't know why. Yet.
So So you intend to question the gambler more about his accusations?
Yes, ma'am, I do. In fact, that's top of my list of things to do once I get Smoke back in custody.
You plan to head back to Fort Worth as soon as you drop off these prisoners at the jail?
Well, that's a mighty long ride, ma'am. I'll probably take the day to rest up, take a bath, and get some shut-eye before I try to ride all the way back there.
Marshal, doesn't a train run between Fort Smith and Fort Worth?
Yes, ma'am. And the South Pacific makes a daily run down there.
What if we all go by train? We'd get there much sooner, and you can sleep while the train's taking us there.
That'd be a right nice idea, ma'am. Except the U.S. Marshal Service don't pay for no train rides. They expect us to use horses to get back and forth.
Oh, for heaven's sake, Marshal, I'll pay your fare. It's important for me to find Smoke before someone else tries to arrest him and causes him to do something that might get him in more trouble than he's already in.
You're right intent on taking care of your man, ain't you, ma'am?
You're damn right, Marshal. So get those horses moving, because we're burning daylight.
Giddy up!
Cal and Pearly were riding southeast down the trail toward Fort Worth, talking about what they were going to do when they got there.
Our only chance now is to talk to the men who was with the Durango Kid on the night he was killed. Maybe they'll know somebody who might have had it in for the kid, enough to shoot him in the back like that.
The road from Jacksboro to Fort Worth was narrow and not much traveled. So Pearly and Cal took notice when they saw a lone rider approaching them from a distance on the trail.
Looks like we got company coming.
Yeah.
Pearly pulled a pocket watch from his pants pocket and looked at the time.
Hell, it's almost noon. Why don't we stop in for a bite to eat? Maybe he'd like to join us.
Don't tell me you're offering to share your grub with a stranger.
Why not? Before we left, I had that German lady fill my saddlebags with enough food for 3 or 4 men for the trip.
Well, ha! Since you usually eat enough for two, that don't leave a whole lot for him and me.
You'll just have to make do. Besides, I want to see what the news out of Fort Worth is. See if this man's heard anything about Smoke or the killing.
Cal and Pearly pulled their horses off the trail, and Cal began to gather some rocks to make a fire while Pearly got his saddlebags off his horse and began to unload the sack lunches the lady at the Hofbräu had prepared for him. He had a package of cold fried chicken, a container of German potato salad, and 3 cans of sliced peaches spread out on his ground blanket when the man on the horse pulled abreast of him. Cal had the water in the coffee pot boiling, and he was just adding in spoonfuls of coffee when he looked up to see the man slow his horse.
Jiminy, that's one of the galoots was at the table with the Durango Kid the night he was killed.
Pearly nodded, turning his back to the man so he wouldn't hear.
Be careful. Keep your hand next to your gun in case he recognizes us. I'm gonna invite him to sup with me.
They were all pretty drunk that night. I doubt he'll remember us since it was the kid who did all the talking this morning.
So keep your guns loose, just in case.
Pearly straightened up and turned to face the man on the trail.
Howdy, mister. We're just about to take a nooning. Care to join us?
Rawhide Jack, tired and dusty from being up all night and on the trail all morning, welcome the chance to get out of the saddle and take a break.
Don't mind if I do, mister.
Jack walked over to the fire.
You gents headed toward Fort Worth?
Yeah, we just come from Jacksboro, on our way to see the big city.
Jack squatted next to the fire and took the cup of coffee Cal handed him with a nod of thanks.
Boy, this sure smells good after sucking in trail dust all day.
You coming from Fort Worth?
Yep. Yeah.
Pearly lay on his left side on the edge of his ground blanket and began to eat the chicken.
Got some fried chicken here, if any you want some.
Sure do. I'm so hungry I almost trade my horse for some.
Dig right in.
As Jack ate, he stared at Pearly for a moment.
You look kind of familiar. I ever seen you before?
Nope, not that I recollect.
How about some of that there tater salad?
Pearly handed the bowl over to the man and continued to munch on a chicken leg.
How are things in Fort Worth? Plenty of action there.
About all you could want, and then some. Prettiest girls I ever seen in all my born days.
What hotel you stay at?
The Star, but it's kind of expensive for my taste. There's plenty more won't take all your drinking money to let you have a bed.
Is it pretty rough over there? We heard the other day a man got back shot outside one of the saloons.
Well, there's some trouble if you go to the wrong places. Where are you? I'd stay in the nicer saloons. Not so much gunplay there.
How about that cowboy got shot? You see it?
Why are you so interested in one shooting? Hell, there was 3 men killed in gunfights the week I was there.
Suddenly, Jack stiffened, and he stared harder at Cal.
You look mighty familiar to me, too. I know you boys from someplace.
Pearly eased his pistol out of his holster, and he had it pointed at Jack when he turned back around.
Yeah, we do know you, mister. We were sitting with Smoke Jensen the night your partner, the Durango Kid, got himself shot dead.
Jack's hand moved toward the gun in his holster until Pearly thumbed the hammer back on his Colt.
I wouldn't do that if I were you, mister. Unless you want to meet up with the kids sooner than you plan to.
God damn it, I knew I'd seen you boys before. I just couldn't remember where.
Cal eased up behind Jack and lifted the man's pistol from his holster, then moved around to sit across from him.
Now you gonna tell us what you know about that night? Or we gonna have to make you tell us?
Hell, you were there too. You know as much as I do.
No, sir, I don't think so. My friend Smoke Jensen has been accused of shooting a kid in the back. And we know for a fact he wouldn't do something like that. Now, you know the kid better than we do. So you probably know who had reason to shoot him.
I don't know nothing.
Cal, go add some wood to the fire. Get the coals nice and hot.
Yeah?
And get the branding iron out of my saddlebags. I can see we're going to have to do some powerful persuading to get this man to talk.
What? What you mean, branding iron?
We're out here 20 miles from nowhere. Won't nobody hear you scream. And I do intend to get the truth out of you, one way or another.
Now, will you just wait a minute? You can't just go around branding a man to make him talk.
Pearly glanced down at his pistol and then pointed at Jack's chest.
Oh? Well, Mr. Colt here says I can do just about anything I want to do out here.
But if I tell you who shot the kid, he'll kill me.
And if you don't tell me, you'll spend the next couple of hours in more pain than you can imagine.
All right. It was Three Fingers Gomez who shot the kid.
Who is Three Fingers Gomez?
He was the Mex sitting with us the night at the Silver Dollar.
Why'd he shoot the kid?
The kid had been riding him pretty hard all week, making him stay down in Mexican Town, not letting him have a fair share of the money we were going to get from selling our cattle.
Your cattle? You mean the cattle you stole?
Yeah, that's what I mean.
Pearly pointed at the chicken on the ground blanket.
Go on and eat your fill, mister. Because when you finish, you're going to go back to Fort Worth with us and clear our friend's name.
But then the marshal will put me in jail.
Better than being branded, ain't it?
Smoke walked around Fort Worth, checking with the desk clerks at most of the hotels near the center of the city. He figured the Durango Kid and his cohorts would probably have stayed somewhere near the Silver Dollar Saloon, where he'd first seen them. The problem was, none of the clerks would tell him if men fitting their description were staying at their hotels. They all said it was against hotel policy. Smoke thought that they just didn't want any trouble in their places. Finally, discouraged that he'd ever find the men unless he ran into them on the street or in a saloon or bar, he returned to the Silver Dollar, hoping Dolly had been able to find something out about their whereabouts. He bought a mug of beer from the bartender and told him if he saw Dolly, to send her over to his table. He found one that was empty in the corner of the room, where he could sit with his back against the wall, as usual. He did this both out of a long-standing habit, and because he wanted to keep an eye out for the three men as well as for Marshal Heck Thomas. He didn't know if Thomas would believe that Tillman had let him go or would try to rearrest him. Smoke was on his second beer when he saw Dolly at the bar talking to the bartender. She glanced over at him, stared a moment as if trying to decide whether to speak to him or not, and finally shrugged and walked over to his table.
Oh, Mr. Jensen, I'm a working girl. I gotta keep circulating or the boss will get mad.
Well, that's all right. I guess you don't have any news for me anyway.
Dolly looked down at him and noticed he was looking mighty discouraged. She stepped around the table and pulled up a chair next to him.
Listen, Smoke, if you'd like to hire my services, we could go up to my room and talk for a while.
I don't think I'm not attracted, Dolly. You are a right handsome woman. But I'm a married man who loves his wife very much. I've never strayed, and I'm not about to start now.
Smoke hoisted his beer glass to her.
So, thanks, but no.
Dolly was touched. She'd been with hundreds of men, a lot of them married, and she respected a man who wouldn't think of cheating on his wife. It was something she didn't often see. She chewed on her lip for a moment, thinking about what she should do.
You really want to talk to those men, huh?
Dolly, I'm a wanted man. wanted for a murder I didn't commit. If they can't help me clear it up, then in all likelihood, I'm going to hang for something I didn't do. It's either that or go to running for the rest of my life. Either way, my life is over if I don't discover who did kill the Durango Kid.
Dolly made up her mind. She glanced over her shoulder to see if anyone could hear her, then leaned over close to Smoke.
I know where they're staying.
Smoke was just about to ask her where, when out of the corner of his eye, he saw something that did not make sense. He turned his head to see four Mexicans enter the saloon. The men were hard-looking gunnies, all wearing pistols tied down low on their legs, two of them carrying rifles. The Silver Dollar was a high-class saloon right in the center of the wealthiest part of Fort Worth. Men like this just did not come here to drink or to gamble. The hair on the back of Smoke's neck stirred when he saw him stand in the doorway, looking around as if searching for someone. He knew instinctively it was him they were looking for.
Dolly, get the hell away from here.
What?
When one of the men in the group saw him and said something to the others, pointing his finger in Smoke's direction, Smoke shoved Dolly aside and flipped the table up on its edge, ducking behind it. The first man drew a pistol and started walking towards Smoke. Smoke drew his right-hand Colt and aimed. The remaining three Mexicans opened fire. Smoke hit the second man in the stomach with his second shot, doubling him over just in time for Smoke's third bullet to enter the top of his head and shatter his skull. As the room filled with heavy layers of gun smoke, making it difficult to see, Smoke leaped to his feet and jumped up on a nearby table, hoping to see over the low-lying cloud of smoke. Smoke could barely make out the two men, their large Mexican sombreros just visible sticking up out of the smoke. Smoke whipped out his left-hand gun. Smoke stepped down off the table and walked toward the men, his guns held waist-high in front of him. He stepped over the first two bodies, seeing they were dead as dirt, and kept walking, blinking his eyes against the acrid sting of the cordite and smoke in the air. The third man was lying on his back, open eyes looking upward, as if he were trying to see the hole in the center of his forehead that Smoke's 44 drilled there. He was dead. The fourth man was on his stomach, crawling on hands and knees toward the bat wings of the saloon, his left arm dragging behind him, a trail of blood on the floor between his legs as he crawled. Smoke knelt next to the man, cocked his Colt, and put it against the gunman's nose.
Who paid you to do this?
Gomez. Hombre with tres fingers. Paid us to kill Smoke Jensen.
Smoke looked back down at the man, whose eyes became unfocused. His blood began to pour from his ear.
Amigo, whatever he paid you, it wasn't enough.
Smoke glanced down at the hunks of flesh and blood that only minutes before had been living, breathing human beings, with hopes and aspirations just as real and poignant as those of anyone else in the saloon. No matter the men had taken money to end another's life, they were still men with souls and minds that to them were the most important things in the world. It was no small thing to Smoke to take all that a man is or ever hopes to be and change it in the blink of an eye to a lifeless pile of meat cooling rapidly in the spring evening. He looked around at the shambles of the saloon, the overturned chairs and tables, men and women coming out from their hiding places, horrified, scared looks on their faces, some openly weeping at the terror they'd experienced just moments before. He saw several other lifeless bodies scattered around the room, three men and one woman who hadn't moved fast enough to get out of the way of the murderous onslaught of the four hired killers. People who were dead in some small way because of him and who he was. That, too, was not an easy thing to live with. He glanced over to the table where he'd been sitting, looking to see if Dolly was all right, and saw her legs sticking out from under an overturned table in the corner. He holstered his pistols and rushed to her side. Dolly lay there, curled in a fetal position, with blood on her chest just below her right shoulder. He gently touched her face, and her eyes opened, cloudy with pain and suffering.
Dolly, you doing all right?
No, I'm not all right. I've been shot, you big blockhead.
Smoke grinned back at her. With his practiced eye, he examined her wound. There was no bright red liquid pumping from the hole in her chest, and there was no foam on her lips or bubbling in her breathing. Evidently, the bullet had missed her lungs. She would most probably survive if infection didn't set in and if she could get medical help soon. Smoke looked up at a gambler standing over him.
Go and get a doctor, now.
The man turned and ran from the room. The bartender came over and squatted next to Dolly, taking her hand in his.
Don't worry none, Dolly. We've sent for the doc.
Thanks. Mr. Jensen, I gotta tell you something.
What's that, Dolly?
The other night, after you were here, I went to see those men you were looking for.
Smoke didn't say anything. He merely nodded. He'd suspected as much.
You see, I knew where they were staying, but I wanted to see if they'd pay me more not to tell you than you would to know.
Don't worry about it, Dolly. Just rest until the doctor gets here.
No, I gotta say this. Just in case.
Go on.
When I was talking to them, I got the idea that the Mexican named Gomez, I think, had something to do with the death of that man they're saying you shot.
He tell you that?
Dolly grinned, but there were specks of blood on her teeth. Not a good sign.
Yeah, but only because I took his gun away from him and he didn't have much choice.
Do you know what kind of gun it was?
Sure. It was a Colt. A Navy model.
Smoke nodded. That made sense, since the gun that had been used to kill the kid was a smaller caliber than the .44 most men carried. And most of the Navies were .36 caliber.
Thanks, Dolly. By telling me that, you may have saved my life.
Dolly leaned her face into his hand. Then her expression got serious.
Now you go on and get out of here before the law gets here, Smoker. You won't be able to go and find those men.
She was right. The town sheriff or even maybe Marshal Thomas would be there shortly after hearing all the commotion. He glanced up at the bartender.
Will you stay with her?
Sure, mister. But like she says, if you're gonna get, you better get fast.
Smoke stood up just as Sheriff Billy Jackson walked through the bat wings and began to look around, a pistol in his hand. The bartender quickly inclined his head toward the rear of the room.
Out the back door before he sees you. I'll make sure he knows you had nothing to do with all this.
Thanks, and make sure the doc takes good care of Dolly. Tell him to spare no expense and I'll make sure he gets paid.
Will do.
As the sheriff began to question the people in the saloon, Smoke ducked his head and made his way slowly out the back door. Once in the alleyway, he moved at a fast pace toward his hotel room, knowing full well the sheriff would soon be there to get his side of the story of the gunfight at the Silver Dollar Saloon. He couldn't afford to be detained, either by the sheriff or by Marshal Thomas if he happened to be in town. Just before he got to the hotel, he saw three riders coming up Main Street. Two of the figures looked familiar, even at the distance they were down the street.
Cal and Pearly. Thank God. I can use some help in this business.
Smoke stepped into a darkened alley.
Hey, Pearly.
Who is it?
Smoke!
Cal jerked his horse's head around and trotted his animal over near the alley.
We got good news for you.
Smoke inclined his head at the man in the saddle next to Pearly.
Who's that?
That's Rawhide Jack Cummins. He's one of the men who were riding with the Durango Kid.
What are you doing with him?
Well, that's the news we gotta tell you.
Smoke looked around, up and down the street.
We need to talk, but I can't go back to the hotel. Sheriff's gonna be there looking for me shortly.
Why don't Pearly and me get some new rooms? You can keep this galoot covered and bring him up the back stairs after we get settled.
That sounds good. I'll just take him down the alley behind the hotel, and you can call down to me and tell me what rooms you're in.
30 minutes later, Smoke took Rawhide Jack up the back stairs to rooms on the same floor as his old room, but down the hall a ways. Once they were all gathered together, Cal and Pearlie quickly filled him in on their tracking of Gibbons to Jacksboro and his subsequent death at the hands of the disgruntled poker players.
I never figured him to last long in the business of card sharking. He just wasn't good enough at it to fool anyone for very long.
He cut his eyes over at Rawhide Jack, who was sitting in a chair by the window, a hangdog expression on his face.
Tell me about this one.
Pearlie told Smoke about how they'd trapped Rawhide Jack on the way to Jacksboro.
And he says he knows who killed the Durango Kid?
Tell him, Jack.
You go to hell! I've done all the talking I'm gonna... You won't dare do nothing to me here in town.
Mister, I just killed 4 Mexican banditos that said you boys paid them to gun me down. Now, I'm not one for torture, but I do aim to get at the truth. After killing 4 men, putting a few minor burn holes in your hide don't sound too bad to me.
You wouldn't dare.
Pearlie, take your bandana and tie it around Jack's mouth. We wouldn't want to disturb the other guests with his screaming.
When Pearlie got up off the bed, Jack held up his hands.
No, now hold on a minute. I guess it won't hurt none to tell my side of it.
Go on.
The Kid, Curly Bob Gatlin, 3 Fingers Gomez and me, we rustled some cattle from some Injuns over in the Nations a couple of weeks back. After we changed the brands, we drove them here and stuck them in a corral at the edge of town, planning on selling them and using the money to pay our way out to California. While we was trying to find a buyer, the Kid kept ragging on Gomez, treating him like dirt and telling me he wasn't going to get an even share of the loot because he didn't do the same amount of work in the driving and branding of the beeves.
So, the Kid was the leader of your gang?
We wasn't no gang or nothing, just a few men trying to make a living.
Go on.
Well, when the Kid called you out and followed you out of the saloon, while we were all watching the front of the place, 3 Fingers Gomez snuck out the back door. He said he didn't know what came over him, but when he saw the Kid standing there, he just drew his pistol and plugged him in the back. When everybody else ran out the front door to see what had happened, he came back in the rear door and just walked out the front with all the other onlookers.
And that's when Gibbons, pissed off because you humiliated him on the train, must have gotten a bright idea to get back at you by claiming he saw you do the shooting.
Come on out, Jensen. We know you're in there.
It's time to tell your story to the sheriff, Jack. And if you don't, then either I or my friends here will kill you dead before you can get out of town.
But they'll arrest me for stealing those beeves.
I don't care about the cattle. You can leave that part out for all I care. But you better be real clear when you tell them Gomez admitted to you he shot the Kid in the back. Or you're a dead man as sure as I'm standing here. You can also tell him that Gomez was the one hired the Mexicans to shoot me down. After all, Gomez isn't here to dispute your story.
Rawhide Jack nodded, his mind working over the possibilities that he might get out of this with his hide intact. Finally, he looked up and nodded.
All right.
It was almost midnight by the time Fort Worth Sheriff Billy Jackson had the stories all straight. He'd taken Smoke, along with Rawhide Jack, Cal, and Pearlie, over to his office under armed guard. True to his word, Rawhide Jack told the sheriff the same story he'd told Smoke, leaving out the part about the rustled cattle. Jackson finally leaned back in his chair and told his deputies to give Smoke and Cal and Pearlie their guns back.
And lock that sumbitch in a back cell till I can talk to Marshal Thomas about him in the morning.
Rawhide Jack was escorted to a cell.
When is Marshal Thomas due back in town?
I don't know. Right now, he's out traipsing around all the ranches in the area looking for some beeves stolen from the Indian Nations a few weeks back.
Was anyone hurt in the theft?
Yeah, seems 3 young braves was gunned down. Evidently, they never stood a chance.
Sheriff Rawhide Jack left out some details in his story. You might want to ask him about some cattle he and his friend sold to a Mexican vaquero night before last. If you hurry, you might even be able to catch up with the herd before it gets to Mexico.
You mean that some bitch?
And if you get a chance to talk to Marshal Thomas, would you be sure to tell him I'm innocent? I don't want him looking for me on the old warrant.
Will do, Mr. Jensen, and thanks for your help, boys. I know the Marshal will be glad to get this cleared up.
Come on, Cal, Pearlie. We need to get some shut-eye if we're going to head down to Galveston after Gomez and Gatling.
Why don't you boys let the law handle this?
Because the law doesn't move fast enough to catch them before they sail off to God knows where. And since I have to go down that way to the King Ranch anyway, I might as well kill two birds with one stone.
I sure as hell wouldn't want you on my back trail, Jensen.
No, Sheriff. I don't believe you would.
Smoke came instantly awake to a light tapping at his hotel room door. Reaching over, he pulled his Colt from its holster hanging on the bedpost and walked on tiptoe over to the door. When he eased it open, his heart began to beat wildly because Sally was standing in the hall, smiling demurely at him.
Is this the room of the famous gunfighter, Smoke Jensen?
Smoke grinned widely and stepped back to let her enter.
How did you get up here? I would have thought that Jason fellow at the front desk wouldn't approve of a woman calling on a male guest in his hotel.
He didn't, until I showed him this.
Sally opened her purse and let Smoke see the shiny surface of her short-barreled Smith & Wesson.
When did you get here?
Less than an hour ago. Monty and Lewis and I came on the train from Fort Smith with Marshal Tillman. We went straight to the sheriff's office, and he told us you were here in the hotel.
What time is it? We've got to get on the train to Houston.
Sally smiled and began to remove her clothes.
Don't worry. We've got hours yet before the train leaves. Plenty of time for us to say hello.
Later, a much refreshed Smoke and Sally joined their friends, along with Marshals Bill Tillman and Heck Thomas, at breakfast in the hotel dining room. It took a while for everyone to tell their part of the story, but by the time Pearly was on his second helping of everything, all were up to date.
What do you plan to do now?
I plan on taking the Cotton Belt train down to Houston. And from there, heading on over to Galveston to see if I can head off Gomez and Curly Bob Gatlin before they get on that steamer.
Tillman glanced at Thomas, pursing his lips as if trying to think of a way to say what was on his mind.
You know, it ain't your job to do that, Smoke. And technically, you're still wanted for the murder of Jim Slade, the Durango Kid.
What? You know I didn't do that. You've got the testimony of a U.S. Marshal that the witness was lying, and the testimony of the killer's partner that he admitted he shot the kid.
I know all that, but the fact of the matter is you've been formally charged with the crime. Don't matter what I know, but what the court rules after considering all the evidence. You're gonna have to go before Judge Parker and be declared not guilty before the charges can be dropped.
That's bull...
Smoke paused and glanced at Sally sitting next to him.
Dung, and you know it.
Yeah, I know it is. But I'll tell you what. If Heck here agrees, I don't see any reason why you can't stop by Fort Smith on your way back to Colorado. After you get your bees from the King Ranch, you gotta drive them pretty near there anyway to get them home.
You trust me to do that?
Tillman and Thomas looked at each other and nodded.
What are you two going to do about Gomez and Gatlin?
Well, our first job is to get those bees back to the Vaquero, bought from the kid's partners. So Heck's gonna take a few deputies and get on the trail after them.
And what are you going to be doing?
Well, I plan to book passage on the Cotton Belt, too.
That's why you're so ready to trust me to come back to Fort Smith. Because you're going to be right by my side the whole time.
Well, the truth of the matter is, we'd kind of hate to have to chase Gomez and Gatlin all the way to the East Coast. Be much easier if they just happened to still be in Galveston when Bill here gets there.
And I would trust you to keep your word, Smoke. You've proven that to me on several occasions already.
Monty pulled a pocket watch out of his coat.
We're going to catch that train. We better get a move on.
Smoke hired a private car on the Cotton Belt so the group could all stay together on the two-day journey down to Houston. From Houston, they'd have to either rent or buy horses for the 50-mile trip down to Galveston, since the train didn't go that far. As they sat at tables in the car, drinking brandy, Monty, Lewis, Cal, and Pearly played with a deck of cards. Pearly was anxious to show Lewis what he'd learned from Smoke about the game of poker. Lewis just grinned, figuring he was going to show Pearly a few things he hadn't yet learned. Bill Tillman, Sally, and Smoke sat at a table alone, talking about the past.
It must be exciting work, Marshal, spending all your time hunting dangerous men.
It is, Mrs. Jensen. Human beings are about the most dangerous game there is to hunt. One of the few animals will shoot back at the hunter.
Sally looked over at Smoke, who was obviously lost in thoughts of the past.
Daydreaming, huh?
Yeah. Just sitting here gathering wool, thinking about old times like some old codger on a porch in his rocking chair.
Well, it's a disease common to all of us that live by the gun. Sometimes memories of the times when your life hangs by the thread of who's quickest with a six-killer are overpowering.
Sally poured tea for herself and stirred in some sugar.
That's an interesting way of putting it, Marshal Tillman. How did you get in the marshalling business anyway?
When I was about eight or so, my father went off to fight in the Civil War. My older brother, Richard, became a drummer boy. I was left alone as the man of the place. Let me tell you, it's quite a job for a boy of eight to help keep food on the table, plow the fields with an old mule, bring in the crops, and take care of my mother all at the same time.
I can see it must have made you mature quite early.
Yep. And it didn't help any when my dad came back from the war blind and my brother married and moved away.
What'd you do?
The only thing I could do. Kept working the farm, taking care of my mom and dad. And after they died, this was the summer of 72, I got work as a professional buffalo hunter. I'd become a pretty fair hand with a rifle, shotgun, knife, and pistol during my years taking care of the farm, so work kind of came natural to me.
I've read stories about the old buffalo hunters, Buffalo Bill Cody and Wild Bill Hickok, but I've never met one. What was the life like?
Well, that summer of 72, me and a group of men made a camp near where the Kiowa and Bluff Creeks come together, about 50 miles from Dodge City. We built a dugout large enough for all 14 of us, and one for the horses and the mules, too. After a while, we just about shot all the buffalo for miles around, so we moved southward and made another similar camp on the Kiowa Creek. Now, just south of there was the Cimarron River on the edge of the Gloss Mountains, home of the Cheyenne. Now, the Cheyenne just naturally resented us white men coming in and shooting up all their buffalo. One day, when we got back from an afternoon of shooting damn near everything in sight, we found the camp destroyed, tents shredded, equipment smashed, and everything just generally torn up.
Did you then leave the area?
The other men wanted to. I was a young buck, full of piss and vinegar. Excuse me, ma'am. Sometimes my mouth forgets I'm in the presence of a lady.
Oh, Marshal, I've lived among cowboys too long to be offended by earthy language. You go ahead and tell your story in your own words. It's a fascinating tale of the Old West.
Yes, ma'am. Like I said, to me the attack was a personal insult, and I wasn't about to stand for it. So, after the other ones took off, I hid in some tall prairie grass near the camp, figuring the engines would come back to see what we'd done. Sure enough, I'd only been there a couple of hours when three of them came back. One of them had a rifle, but the other two only had these long, nasty-looking knives. When they saw me, they charged right at me, whooping and hollering to beat the band. Yes, they figured it'd scare me off like the others.
And did it?
No, ma'am. I let the hammer down on my shotgun. A full double load of buckshot hit the lead one in the stomach, killing him right away. Second one, seeing my gun was empty, ran up at me with that big knife in his hand, figuring on getting my scalp. I clipped him hard under the chin with the butt of my shotgun and knocked him on it, down in the grass, unconscious. The third one jumped on my back, intent on cutting my throat, and we wrestled around a bit before I was able to turn that knife into his own throat.
What happened to the one you knocked down?
Oh, when he got up, he saw what had happened to his friends. He turned off running and never looked back.
I'd venture a guess that you had no further problems with the Cheyennes on that hunt.
Nope. As a matter of fact, a few days later, we had the best hunt of the year at that particular spot.
So the other hunters returned after you'd gotten rid of the Indians?
Yeah. They showed up the next day, all carrying their big Sharps buffalo rifles, ready to do some shooting.
What caliber Sharps did you use?
Smoke was interested, since he'd had a lot of experience with the gun called the Sharps Big 50, a .52 caliber weapon, when he was up in the mountains with Preacher in his early days.
Oh, I didn't use the Sharps. I used a shotgun.
What? How on earth could you kill a buffalo with a shotgun?
You sound just like my old hunting partners. They asked the same question.
Well?
I made some special loads for my shells. Instead of buckshot, I substituted a single-lead slug in the shell.
Why did you do that?
Smoke will know what I mean when I say I didn't much like the way Sharps kicked. I was afraid it'd knock me off my feet or give me a broken shoulder.
And did it work?
Only too well. Best thing was, I could fire while riding my pony without having to jump down and fire from the ground like my partners. In less than half an hour that first day, I'd bagged a dozen buffalo. I guess the number I got total that year was over 4,000. Well, combined total all my partners taken together was less than half of that.
Did they finally see the light?
Oh, yeah. Before long, all of them wanted to use shotguns instead of Sharps.
What did you do after you gave up buffalo hunting, Marshal?
Well, the buffalo got scarce sometime around 75. I rode on over to Dodge City just to see what was going on. I met Charlie Bassett, who was sheriff of Ford County, and he asked me if I considered being his deputy. Heck, I didn't have nothing else going on, and I'd never been a lawman before, so I said I'd give it a shot.
Wasn't Dodge City very rough back then?
Yes, ma'am. On my second day on the job, I had a run-in with a local gunman named Texas Bill. When he saw my shiny new badge, he stepped in front of me on the boardwalk and blocked my path. I told him, you'll have to turn your guns in or leave town. It's a new ordinance.
Did he draw on you?
Not then. He just said, never heard of it. If you want them, come and take them from me.
Well, did you?
Being new to the job, I didn't quite know what to do. It seemed a small thing to shoot a man over. So I just slugged him.
You knocked him out.
Yeah, and then two of his buddies jumped on me and I had to knock them out too. Once they was out cold, I just got some citizens to help me carry him to jail.
Those were certainly rough times in Dodge.
Yeah, you're right, Smoke. And it went from bad to worse. In early 76, Mayor Dog Kelly, who owned the Alhambra Saloon, wired Wyatt Earp over at Wichita to come into Dodge and take over from the town marshal. Old Dog had heard a bunch of old Texas cowboys were on their way to Dodge, and he didn't think that Bat Masterson and I could handle it alone.
So that's how Wyatt got to Dodge. I always wondered.
Uh-huh. And he brought Neil Brown and Bat's brother Ed with him.
I assume everything went all right and you were able to control the cowboys.
Yeah, but it weren't easy. Back then, the town was full of toughs. Men like Doc Holliday, Ben Thompson, and even the worst of them all, Wes Harden. After a while, Bat Masterson was elected sheriff of Ford County and hired me to stay on as deputy.
And how was that?
That was all right. But I soon tired of it and homesteaded me a few hundred acres, built me a cabin, married a widow woman named Flora Robinson. Partnered up with Neil Brown and just took life easy for a while.
Smoke wanted to ask more about the wild days and times Tillman had lived in, but noticed Sally was trying to stifle a yawn across the table. He stood up.
Well, Marshal, this has been most interesting. But I see my wife is about to fall asleep at the table. We'd better call it a night.
Tillman glanced at Sally, a chagrined look on his face.
I'm sorry, ma'am. Hope we haven't bored you to death with all this man talk about the past.
Oh, no. It was very interesting and exciting. But as you know, Marshal, we've been on trains for the better part of 3 days, and I'm just exhausted. I hope we'll be able to continue the stories tomorrow.
I'm done wore out talking about myself, ma'am. But maybe you can get Smoke here to tell us some of his adventures up in the mountains, back before white man came here.
Sally looked at her husband.
Getting Smoke to talk about himself is like pulling teeth, but I'll try. Good night, Marshal.
Good night, ma'am.
The private car the group was riding in was divided into three parts. Private sleeping quarters for Sally and Smoke, a bunk room for the other men, and the main part of the car. After Sally and Smoke retired, Tillman walked over to the poker table, where Louis Longmont was giving Cal and Pearlie and Monte Carson a lesson in cardmanship.
Well, you boys have markedly improved your skills at poker. It took me almost 2 hours to clean you out.
They'd been playing with poker chips that came with the car, not for real money. But losing still stung the boys.
I never seen such a run of luck. I don't believe luck had nothing to do with it, Pearlie. If I remember correctly, you had just as many good hands as Louis. You just didn't win as much with him as he did.
That's the most important lesson you can learn about poker, Cal. Luck may determine who wins a particular hand, but at the end of the night, luck has nothing to do with who has the most chips.
The sheriff's right, boys. You gotta know when to hold them and when to fold them. When to bet big, and when to ease into a hand to make the most money from your luck when it hits.
I guess I still got a lot to learn, then.
I don't feel too bad, Pearlie. You didn't learn to handle a cowpony or a mean steer overnight. It took you a lot of years and a lot of sore behinds before you could stay in the saddle in the middle of a stampeding herd, didn't it?
Got that right, Mr. Longmont.
Well, the same is true of any other skill, even poker. You have to get your butt kicked a few times before the lessons sink in, but then you don't forget them.
Gentlemen, I'm going to hit the hay. It's been a long day, and tomorrow don't figure to be any shorter. Night, men.
The other men agreed, and they all decided to hit the bunks. As Bill Tillman lay there, images from his past kept flicking through his mind, brought on by his retelling the story of his early days to Smoke and Sally. As he finally dozed off, the images turned into dreams.